I always wanted to have my own Michelin star. Cried my eyes out. Half the team cried their eyes out. It was one of the most magical days of my entire life, and one that I will never, ever, ever forget. And just the first thing that came from my mind was just everything I've been through.
Yeah.
All the sacrifices, all the shit hard days, the mental health aspect to it all.
Hello everyone, welcome back. This is the Birmingham Food Podcast Breaking Bread, presented by Food Obsessed Mates, Liam and Carl. I'm Liam.
Oh, I'm Carl. Introduce myself, I'm Carl. Jesus. You know, I was trying to think what to say at the intros. I never, like, you always hit that record button and I sit here and I'm like, what should I say when it comes to me?
I did think when you started doing funny stuff and I thought he's going to have to try and keep that up.
It wasn't even that, I was just trying to think. I'm going to talk now. You know, we're on over 100 episodes now, so I think it's forgivable.
Yeah, man. And there's people that probably never even heard any of the first few. I must start putting a few of the old ones back up, throw them up out there. Like, you know, you had some bangers.
Luke Chipping,
Godfather of Birmingham Hospitality.
Yeah, it's still one of the best ones we've done. It was a great
podcast.
Yeah,
I love that one, yeah. Yeah, we should definitely do it. Anyway, this episode's really long, but really good.
Oh, yeah.
Before I start waffling on about old times.
I know, yeah. Jesus.
Unbelievable, mate. I mean, I said it in last week's podcast with Alex, you know, when you made a list of people you started with, Tom Shepherd was definitely on that list. What if someone said, like, what's the dream of Breaking Bread? What is it? We would say, well, sitting in a Michelin star restaurant, talking to a Michelin star chef who's been on the telly and is a really nice guy. That's the dream. And this is what we did with this podcast. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a cool cat, man. And just like, as I said, just won the Great British Memorial. Well, for us, just won it. Like, we only just seen it. But yeah, then we get him on the podcast and he was so humble and nice and such a cool dude.
It's not even surprising anymore. Like, you know, all these people are really nice.
How he came across on telly is how he's in real life as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. From me, Tom.
So talented.
Oh, every one of his dishes I wanted to try.
Yeah. 100%.
Every single one of them. Did you want to talk about anywhere you've been eating before we shoot into this interview?
Yeah, well, we've got to bring up Lucky Seven, I think.
Lucky Seven. Rob the genius.
Rob's back,
so
baby.
Lucky to have him. And Kendra.
Yeah.
Her hospitality, his drinks, unbelievable.
He's just like the godfather, really, of cocktails, isn't he, when you think about it?
Just the flavour, just the way his brain works, putting flavours together. Unbelievable.
Kimchi party, man. Unbelievable. What a cocktail. He's like it's almost like a new type of cocktail. It's like mad how his brain works and the combinations and how they taste. It's just it's like a Bloody Mary but with kimchi. So it's an odd experience, but it's so delicious. Like 100% would get it again when I go there. It's typical Rob. You can't find the bar. No signs. Like, it's just a doorway.
Yeah. And a light. If the light's on, you can go up.
Well, you got to go in the doorway to see the light, ain't you? Like,
yeah.
But I get it. Like, it's a small place, but it's so funky and cool as well.
Oh, I loved it. I did.
It's one of the, I think it's only going to get better as well. And it's already good.
As you'd expect with Rob, alcohol free. Unbelievable.
Yeah, for you, it's like the best possible cocktail option.
Yeah. If I want to go to cocktail bars, that's where I'm going, because it's just got everything for me. Like.
Yeah, you get as good a drink as I get.
They've got a version of my favourite ever drink that they had on at the Wilderness. The jasmine tea drink. It's just brilliant. It's sweet, but not too sweet. And it's on the edge of savoury. Oh, fantastic. Where else have we been?
Well, speaking of cocktails, I was at Passing Fancies again.
Oh, man. How can you not love Passing Fancies? Congratulations to Matt as well.
Yeah, and greatest cocktail maker in the country. Well, top award anyway.
Yeah.
And he goes into the world finals. Brazil, is it?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Fair play to him.
Oh, mate. But yeah, everyone that works there is just super talented. But I went there and it was when Tierra Tacos were there. And I knew they were there, but I'd forgot. And luckily I was like, I'd had a few drinks by the time I got there. And then I was like, oh my God, this was the best idea in the world. And just ordered loads of food as well.
It's funny, you know, Tom put a, a job description up. He's looking for someone to come and work with them.
Yeah, it's and a good job description. They'll get plenty of applicants.
Me, want to apply.
Yeah, I read it. I was like, yeah, I might join. I might apply for that. Sounds good.
What was it at the end? It just said, like, listen, just be a good person who gives a shit. That's all you need to do. I don't care about experience. I was like, that's how you do it.
I know, man. Just offering a job just to anyone that's just a good person.
Yeah.
I said, the three of them, they're such good teachers that they could just mold anyone with the right attitude into a great, like, cocktail maker.
You sound like great fun. I was really tempted.
I've got to admit, I was, genuinely. I was like, 4-day week. I could do that. Then again, I'm on a 4-day week now. So
yeah, that's what I'm Tierra Taco's on the road again now, aren't they? They're at their place at the minute. They're doing little pop-ups and stuff, so keep an eye out for them.
Yeah.
Cool stuff, man. Love Tierra Taco's. What about your nice little Carl day? So one thing I love that you do is you decide to take a little day off for yourself and go and treat yourself to something nice.
Yep. 2 days of the year, only two. There's 365 of them, and two of them are for me. Just me and nothing else. Like, I love my wife. I love my daughter very much. All this stuff. But 2 days are my days, and I can do anything I like on them, which is fair enough, I think.
Yeah.
And, this one I used to go to smoke. Took myself to smoke for lunch. Like, Stu Dealey's, I mean, I talked about him a lot anyways. Easily one of my favourite chefs. How he does food and thinks about food is just exactly on my wavelength. And, yeah, smoke. I went there not long after it opened. I've been a few times, and this was definitely the best time I've been. Like, it's firing on all cylinders now. Like, the drink selection's great because all the wine's from Wine Freedom. They get them from them. The cocktails are brilliant. The food, oh, my days, it's so good.
Makes sense that it's going to bed in a little bit, though. You know, restaurant's going to grow with the chef.
Yeah. Well, he's absolutely smashing it now, and it's getting bigger. They're building another terrace out there, so the covers are going to go right up. So,
what was the standout dish?
It's the one before I took the photo, I chopped it up. Which was the Thai scallops. Like, it came, and just something in my head before I took a photo just went, I'm going to chop this up. And just chopped it up and was like, I took a photo.
It sounds like a Stu Dealey dish, that does.
Yeah, it was the most Stu Dealey dish on the menu, I think. And it was absolutely, it was just delicious. Mm. Everything was delicious. The American pork was delicious. Obviously, like, everything's barbecued. It's all cooked over coals. And that's the thing, hence the name Smoke. And we've talked about Smoke a fair bit.
Yeah.
I went there, and it was just a great day. Like, I think the lunch offer, it's a really good offer as well. Don't ask me how much it is off the top of my head, but I'm sure it's like £60 for lunch or something like that.
There's quite a few good lunch offers popping up there. See, Craze, that was classic.
Yeah, that looked good. It's £6.70. Lunch looks good. Good lunch offer.
I think it's going to happen now, isn't it? The way things are, people are going to be looking for a bit more value, I think.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. Like,
yeah.
And lunchtime's a good time to get people into the restaurant. If you're not going to be busy that day, if you can do something that does turn a profit, gets people bums on seats.
Yeah.
Oh, go for it.
Tell you what, back to today's episode. Somebody who doesn't have any problems getting people booked in.
Jesus, trying to get a table there.
Trying to get a table upstairs by Tom Shepherd in Lichfield is just... you were on there the day the bookings went out. When you
went out in May, I think, and I booked a table for May next year.
And you were on there straight away trying to get bookings.
Oh,
I think it was easier to get Foo Fighters tickets.
Yeah, that would have been way easier. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, fair play. Like, Jesus, to be booked. But that's not just because of the Great British Menu. He's had this since he's opened.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we've tried a couple of times to book. I'm thinking, oh, there's plenty of time. Yeah, we'll book for Cramley. Times we tried booking for Christmas. And we've tried the last, like, two Christmases.
I mean, it's a small enough restaurant, but still, to be that oversubscribed is ridiculous.
Like, yeah, what a nice problem to have.
Yeah, I mean... He deserves everything he gets, man. It's class. Just a real insight into Tom's story, how he's got to this point. Some good tips for business. He's very screwed on as a businessman, which you sometimes don't get with chefs. So just loads of great insight. Get to know one of the nicest guys in hospitality. This is Tom Shepherd.
Places doing well.
I think especially now as well. I mean, are we recording now?
It's on, but it hadn't properly started.
We might as well just start there.
Just start there.
Let's go, baby.
I think especially now. I mean, I was at the National Restaurant Awards on Monday, speaking to Brad and Hector, and I went down with Mark Birchall, And they're all saying it's just so up and down. You'll start to see a bit more of an influx of people coming in. You think, oh, here it goes. No, you know, the sort of quiet times have kind of start to build, and all of a sudden you'll get a week. And it was, he said, like Mark was saying to me, he's like, the week before was just shocking, like absolutely shocking. So yeah, I'm so happy that this restaurant, you know, hasn't and not going for that stage at the moment. But there's obviously reasons for that, which is amazing, especially with like Great British Menu and obviously.
But the bookings are mad. Like Tom booked in for May next year, so that's nearly a year, and I booked it a couple of months ago. I think
it's crazy, isn't it?
I mean, must be so nice to have them books full for that amount of time.
Oh, it's just incredible. The support that the upstairs has had since the day we opened has just been absolutely phenomenal. The Lichfield community, first off, just absolutely took us in from the very get go. They were just so interested and excited about upstairs opening. And then, you know, fortunately for us, they came and they experienced it and they liked it, and it gave them a reason to come back. And from that perspective, we've just been taken in, you know, from Lichfield, which is just, you know, just an amazing thing. And then from that, because things happened and moved quite quickly, you know, we soon got on people's radar a bit outside of Lichfield, and it attracted them down to a restaurant, and that's just continuing now, really.
Are you from Lichfield?
I'm from Sutton Coldfield originally.
Yeah.
So I went to primary school in Sutton, and then we moved. Just obviously, my dad's business is downstairs, so we moved into Lichfield when I was 11. I'm 35 now, so 24 years.
So it's your dad's business that's below us.
City Jewelers. It literally opened, you know, 24 years ago, but it wasn't here. It was in a previous place, which was a lot smaller. Hence, that dad's downstairs to a bigger premises, and why I didn't need upstairs. So that was the prime example of me coming upstairs, really.
Sutton's only down the road, though, isn't it, really? It's not far from here, Sutton.
No, not at all. Yeah. No, we get a lot of... That was the thing. It's like even that Four Oaks, and where I actually grew up, like Four Oaks and that side is closer to here. Mm. You've got to drive through Shenstone to get to Lichfield.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
And we're there. So to be fair, yeah, it's and like, same with Tamworth. I mean, Lichfield's a really good sort of middle gap around a lot of different places. So you can even go as far as like Derby, Burton. Nottingham is probably a bit far, but people, it's only 45 minutes away, don't I mean? So people would still probably definitely travel. If you're travelling from Birmingham, where I live in sort of Stafford Way, it's over, you know, it's nearly an hour to get to Birmingham, and I wouldn't even question that.
Mm.
So there's no reason for those people not to as well. So, and they don't, and it's like to Derby, and then you know, obviously this end all the way to Cannock, and obviously Rugeley and Stafford, that way Tamworth, Sutton, you know, you've got like all the areas, and that would literally come in just for here.
I call everywhere Greater Birmingham. Yeah, so like Cannock's Greater Birmingham.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wolverhampton, that's Greater Birmingham.
Oh, it is, really.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, we had a 33 class as Greater Birmingham at one point. over to Stu Collins. Nearly Birmingham, that's fine.
The funny thing is you say that, because we had a few people, and mate, it's funny how you can sort of like annoy people and disgruntle people, but you know, when I did Great British Menu and Andy Oliver kept on referring to me as Brummy Tom. Obviously, that's like she didn't just decide to say that. She's obviously coming to me. She goes, "Oh, Tommy, are you from Birmingham?" I was like, "All the production were Birmingham." So my accent was coming out more and more. And I said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." So I've got some from Sutton Coldfield. She's like, "Oh, no, Sutton." So obviously, when I watched it back, obviously she starts calling me Brummy Tom, which I thought was wicked. Never thought that the some people from the restaurant would be annoyed and have complaints about it. So we'd have people on the chef's table. They would go, "Well done, Tommy. Amazing. You're doing Great British Menu. Absolutely loved seeing you on there. I just wish that Andy Oliver wouldn't call you Brummy Tom." And I was like, "Why?" She goes, "We're not from Birmingham, we're from Lichfield." I said, no, I'm quite proud as well. I sort of state that I'm from Birmingham, really. Do you know what I mean? That she was like, and I'd all be like, okay, well, you know, your restaurant's in Lichfield, though. I said, "No, definitely." I said, "Well, Adam Handling's not going to say he's from London when he sounds like a Scotsman." Do you know what I mean? It's like the same sort of difference, but... Anyway, it's funny how certain things like can rub people up. They've almost taken me in as their own. You know what I mean? Let's say Lichfield. I've been taken as Lichfield. I've been here from the longest part of my life. But it's funny how personal.
Isn't it the UK's smallest city?
Second. Yeah, smallest. I don't know the first, so please don't ask me that. But I remember stating it to someone. They went, "No, it's the second actually." It says so and so is the smallest. So I was like, "Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll probably stop using that." But it's the second one. Yeah. And the amount of people who visit outside of the city are very much like, they're a little sort of little market town. It's like, "No, I've got this massive cathedral just behind it." And but yeah, it is what it is.
It's the beauty of a Michelin star. It brings people. There is people who get the book every year. And, "Oh, there's someone there. Still, let's go there." You know.
No, I know it is. And people, I remember, it brings the good and the bad in. I always remember one when we first got it. And we had our menu is obviously online, and we had an email off this certain gentleman, and I can't remember his name. To be fair, I probably would give it to you if I remember. But and this email, we had a dish on. I think it was a roasted turbot dish at the time. It was an absolutely delicious dish, and it was with a vingerin sauce, which is a type of white French wine. And how we do our menus is we do obviously the main element, which would be roast Cornish turbot, and then underneath we just write a very sort of normally 2 to 3 elements. But we always start each sentence of that with a capital. So it was vingerin was first, so we put obviously a capital V and then a soft J, and then continuing throughout. It's two separate words. So this guy emailed in, and he went into quite a large paragraph to start off with, and it was basically his idea of mine, like almost educating me on the introduction to Michelin star restaurants. So it started off basically by telling me how I need to really concentrate on things like this, because now I've been fortunate enough to get a Michelin star. I need to understand the type of clientele that come into the restaurant, and using a soft J for Joanne would not pass it. They're the type of things I really need to start looking into. And I remember just like reading this email. Obviously, first of all, can I say certain words on it?
Say what you like, man. I do.
So first of all, I was like, what a fucking cock. Like, what sort of guy is out there that genuinely feels the need for that? People might argue it's support, which is fine, but you didn't read the introduction email, which is essentially the most, what's that word? It's like patronising. It was one of the most patronising sort of sentences that I'd ever read, in essence of it was just a complete lack of knowledge and understanding of like my background completely, and just thinking that, you know, now you're lucky enough to get a Michelin star, you need to start looking at your spelling base. And, you know, I was just like, okay, cool. But it was like a light switch, though, like you said about people still come down. People are really on that, and they watch it on Twitter and you know, unfold. And the moment those restaurants, they're even remotely local to them, like, well, we need to get in there straight away. And the bookings did, when we opened them on the end of Feb, the bookings did go crazy, which is amazing. But we do also get that. It was like a light switch. Come when they came in, it was like, oh, that's a different type of clientele. They're sort of asking for different things. They're really testing our staff. Some people get stuff out of it, but some people don't. Yeah, some people are just nice and normal and just enjoy their experience and that's it. But some people like to test us. And that's the same in any restaurant. It's the same in any restaurant I've been to as well. In essence of where I've worked, we always get those sort of customers who like to feel that, you know, they're
some type of expert on something.
Yeah, exactly. They
like to quiz us. What do you do in that situation? Do you have to kind of alter your style and alter things you do, or just say, nah, fuck that, let's just do what we do?
Well, we use this term, you know, Madagascar, and I think he's like, I think it's about the guy that Ali G plays, and he goes, smile and wave, boys, smile and wave. It's the penguins.
That's 90% of hospitality, isn't it? Just smile and wave.
We use it from the start, and I've said to the guys, and it is literally that. It's, listen, I'm not going to start to say about that we get these difficult customers, because we really don't. I'm going to be brutally honest. The customers we get here are absolutely amazing. Like, absolutely amazing. But you're always going to naturally get the odd one or two. But yeah, literally that. We smile and wave, and we just absolutely mad and whatever it might be. And it's just, we come into the back. I don't allow our front of house or anybody actually to sort of overly show their emotions in that time. I don't like to go into the back and hear, you know, oh, fucking table two is all right, dick. For when you own your own business as well, it's like, yeah, table two is still a person, and they're still supporting us, and they're still paying. So if you may feel they're a dick, that's fine, but just keep them fucking opinions to yourself. Yeah. You know what I mean? But also, we also know from a mental perspective, you know that you're going to approach that table now with probably not the same sort of vigor and sort of, you know, energy that you would, just because you think they're a dick. So just the simple fact of removing that from your whole mindset and just going, accept them, drop your fucking plate off in the pot, and then walk back out and fucking smile, give them extra. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's how you should be doing it.
You're at work, aren't you? You're not really here for your own opinions. You're here to do your job, basically.
Of course, mate, if you think that every single person is going to be your cup of tea, you're fucking on bloody fantasy world. Do you know what I mean? That's how it is, and we're there to showcase us. Do you know what I mean? We're not there to make friends, and I mean, we're there to showcase us. And I said, when you own your business, that customers are obviously even more important to you. But before that, you don't think of them like that. But they are, they're so important. So regardless of their personality, if they're here supporting upstairs, that's fucking fantastic. Do you know what I mean?
It's important to stick to what you do best as well. You know, even working in a little pub, local pub. You always get that one customer. You know what you need to do here? You know what you could do with here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tell me what we could do. You're the fifth person today, and you've got to block that out and say, let's stick to what we do best.
Of course. I mean, customer feedback is good. And from the right people, if you do build those relationships with people who come regularly, and we have a couple called Gene and Tony, and they've been about 8 or 9 times. But they actually like to sort of sit down and have a little chat with you after. And
how did they get a table 8 or 9 times? They must have a brown envelope for somebody.
First of all, it's Thursday lunch. So it's probably the most undesirable day of the week or service of the week. But they come over, they sit right there in the corner, table 5. And so they can probably keep an eye on me from their seat. But they're a lovely, lovely couple. And they eat out, like when I say everywhere, they're actually people who do eat out everywhere so regularly. I think one of their favourite restaurants is the Raby Hunt up in the northeast. But they've eaten like they used to eat at Adams quite a lot when I was there. I'm sure they still do. And they just enjoy food. But that they won't critique you as in this. They don't go through every single dish. But every single time we sit down, they just go, Tommy, just getting better and better and better. And they'll just say like little bits about the certain dishes. Like, as in like, they'll just say, I really loved it. The new fish cookery is this. And it's so refreshing to hear. And then sometimes we'll get these regulars and I'll just come in and just go, yeah, I see what you did. I didn't quite get that. I said, I understood it. The rest of the table loved it. So it's personal. But then certain people have said something, not even about the food, even about how we may do things. Sometimes you've implemented them into the business because you always see it from your perspective, which is the deliverer, but you haven't received that delivery. So sometimes it may seem good from your eye, but from a customer's perspective, it may be different. So when they've actually made, some people have made a really good point on certain things, and I've gone, that's a fucking great show, that is. Let's just give it a go. And nine times out of 10, it's actually worked out. So it is important, as much as it's one way, when you can see right through something, ignore it, do you know what I mean, and walk away or whatever. But certain things who are there to help you. Certain people are actually wanting to sort of say, listen, so I don't want to say, but this may work better. You do it. And it's like, actually, fucking hell, that has it. You just work better. And
do you ever sit in the restaurant as a customer just to test it out?
I did it once.
Yeah.
I did it for the first time about 2 months ago.
Did it work, though? Because everyone's on edge. So like gaffers there.
Yeah, to be fair, mate, I'm not that type of person. I think that they obviously know this, and it's a mutual feeling between the whole team. I don't put myself across as that sergeant major person who's sort of, you know, yeah, I want the people to be people. I want the customers to experience the people I employ as personality, because that's why I employed them. Because to me, they're amazing people. So for me, I want the customer to taste a bit of that. So when I sat there, it was more of a case of, yes, I obviously wanted to see the delivery of the front of house, which was great. But the chefs, man, they've been in there. I mean, Mike's been with me 7, 8 years. Noah's been with Adams for 4 years, you know, he's in before here. Dan and Ollie have pretty much been here from the start anyway. So the nucleus of four or five chefs that have been there have been on every journey. We've been through some real hard bits here. So cooking for me on a lunchtime isn't really something that they're really bothered about, but they do want to make sure that everything's proper. And I think from my point of view, I wanted to make sure that the menu had a great flow to it and really everything was there for the right reasons. And I was very, very happy. Very happy with the delivery, very happy with the front of house. Yeah, but we're a young team of full of desire and what we want to just keep pushing, want to keep driving. And that's super refreshing.
You've done well to keep hold of your team as well.
Yeah, the front of house, we've gone through. So I think the first, we opened, because of when we opened as well, we did open with a couple of people who had automatically said this in time, like, I'll take the job, but I'm not going to be here next June. I'm not going to be here next July or whatever, because I want to do this for summer and this, and I'm moving back to Wales and all stuff like this. So that was the hardest part of opening up in the kitchen. I knew the guys would be, you know, right behind us and want to stick into it. The front of house were quite sort of up and down, but become April of 2022, new restaurant manager, new front of house team, and they're all still here. So that's the difference, I think, now. So we were able to get that front of house back in, you know, real cemented sort of team, and they're able to build. But no, it is good, and we hope to attract. We've got a sommelier called Cam, who we've attracted from sort of March. We had Alex, who started with us, who was phenomenal. He wanted to go travel. He's actually working over at Key now in Australia, which is a phenomenal restaurant, and which gave us great pleasure in obviously wishing him, you know, all the best. And I'm sure there's a part of me, I think he will definitely be back at some point in the future. we had a lady called Camilla or Cam who replaced him, and her wine knowledge is just incredible. So we are starting to attract some seriously good talent as well, as and when we need it, which is, again, you know, absolutely amazing.
Is it hard to build the front of house team, being a chef opening your own restaurant?
That's a really good question. I think that the main thing is, especially at the start before GBM, no one saw me as a restaurateur. It was just a chef. Mm. So when I asked for chefs, we got a fair few CVs come through. Front of house, it was like tumbleweed. I'm going to be honest, it literally was like tumbleweed. Really pleased that Anthony obviously knocked on our door. But some of the guys who we took on were just like, yeah, I didn't give it a go first. So I waited until second week. I thought there'd just be a massive influx of like professionals. And I'm like, A, you were a professional, and B, you got the bloody job. So, you haven't got it through default. It's like, you know, you're a great person. But I think it's the misunderstanding. But I think since then, we have had a few just sort of emails just drop really sporadically, just on a random weekday, just going, I'm looking for front of house work, and they've had a really good CV. We've had a chef CV, actually, from a young lad called Ben. He did 6 years at Le Manoir, and he's looking for a new position sort of around these parts. He saw upstairs, saw me on Great British Menu, he was like, I'd love to come up. And we haven't got room for him, but sometimes I do sort of think that if they're the right person, you can sort of make room for them, especially when you're busy. So if he comes in and is a bit of a superstar, then I want to take him on upstairs.
Yeah.
So it just goes without saying.
Because it's the biggest thing at the moment from people. One of them costs.
Yeah.
It's staff. There's so many places, especially in this. I think it's worse in Birmingham City Centre because there's competition there for a lot of people as well. And so many places are struggling to get the right staff in.
So I think the same in London. I said on Monday at the NRAs, that was the topic. That and how sporadic everything is was the topic. And I just sort of just said, oh yeah, absolutely. because I didn't want to come across like a cock, but it wasn't the same as us at the moment. I'm sure, I know it will. I know for our lifetime of this restaurant, we'll definitely reach that point. Of course we will. It's just, you know, everyone has that. I've been speaking to Tom Kerridge, like, every restaurant, no matter if it's short or long, you will have that time where you are in that eye. And it's just important we try and keep ourselves in that eye for as long as we possibly can. But no, the more restaurants that are in that sort of circle, you see a lot of chefs, and I saw it at Adams, you see a lot of chefs doing the rounds in Birmingham as well. It's the go from one to another to another to another, and it's like, I've worked at Ophim, I've worked at Purnell's. It's that's completely normal as well, to be fair. But in Lichfield, we haven't got that. So it's either upstairs or obviously a pub or a sort of more relaxed dining experience sort of thing. So if I want to come to a Michelin-star restaurant, there is only one. Which for us is obviously beneficial.
Yeah, where's the nearest Michelin star to here other than Birmingham?
It's Birmingham or Sats in Nottingham. There's nothing the other way really. Obviously Cheltenham, but that's obviously a lot further than Birmingham. So yeah, so Birmingham or not really.
It's good for you.
No, it is. Yeah. Like even things like the clean air zone in Birmingham and you know, obviously the trains going down of recent times and just the expense of staying over there. Yeah, to get a taxi from some of these areas is like 20 quid and they haven't even got to fucking worry about it. And I think that's the difference. And there's no clean air zone. You can leave your car overnight and you won't get charged. It's just
up, it's £4.30 for the whole day. I couldn't believe it.
That's what I mean.
That's an hour in Birmingham.
Literally, man. And that's the difference, isn't it? And with all due respect at the moment, we price our menu right as well. So for us, not saying that restaurants don't anyway, but for us, we're cheaper than anyone in Birmingham.
Yeah.
So naturally, that's including some restaurants that haven't got a star. And listen, a star is just essentially it's an incredible achievement, but it's not the be all and end all of pricing. In the day, if you've cost a menu to be a certain price, that's it. It's
not, you do see a few places that get a star and then you recheck the menu and you're like, hang on.
Well, that's why we kept ours until April, until the electrical. We did it methodically. It was a case of, we don't need to put our prices up in February, March. We just don't need to. Our product's the same. And then equally, we're going through seasons as well. So we're going out sort of winter into spring, but the spring season was a bit slow. So, and then all of a sudden we get to like end of April and I get the electricity bill that went from 1,200 quid to 3,600. Wow. And we were like, okay, that's okay, cool. So we need to start addressing this. Obviously, you know, wage increase and everything else. And I was like, well, this is where, so we put all that into the P&L and essentially that's what we got back. And that was it. So that's what we did. And I can count on one hand that customers have sort of really mentioned something. I think that's because they were done at the right times. It weren't just got a star, but the price is up. That's the first, literally every single person in the industry they congratulate you and they're getting the star, the very next sentence would be, put price up now, mate. It's like, I don't really go for it. I mean, I don't really think of the Michelin star and then go, I can put my price. I never thought that. But, I mean, same with GBM, everyone was like, put your price up again now. No, I'll probably just keep them the same, to be fair, because the menu works and there's not much point in doing that anyway because you're going to piss people off. But
I suppose since you are in a position where you're in Lichfield and you do have regular sort of customers, they'd notice straight away.
Of course. I said I can count on one hand. And I think that from their perspective, it was just a bit like our lunch menu used to be, like even looking back now, which we've only been open 20 months, but we used to do 3 courses for 35 quid. And that wasn't a promotional thing. That was just like that's our menu. But they were like, we used to do like main courses of like pork belly. And we used to do main courses of like chicken main courses. We never used to have like the turbot and like the hogget that we've got at the moment or some, ex-dairy cows or anything like beef, anything like that. But, the snacks used to be minimized and we never used to serve the gazpacho and all this. And we used to turn around to each other. It's not about there's a balance and there's a middle ground. And for us, it was a case of, the lunch menu isn't everything that upstairs does and can do. So I thought to myself, I want everyone to come here and experience what upstairs is about. Mm. And having all those snacks and having the gazpacho and having the dishes that we do, that's what upstairs, having the Thai green curry, this is upstairs. And when you have the 3-course lunch, it's not. And I thought, how can we sort of manipulate it where it's a case of that we're still doing a cheaper product, a more reasonable menu price, but they're still having upstairs. So we started doing a reduced tasting menu. So that essentially they had all the same start with the gazpacho. We then changed the sort of first and second courses. And then they had the same main course and then the dessert was the same. And it went down an absolute storm. But some people have gone, how can you go from 35 to 60 quid? And we're like, well, look at the ingredients on the menu type of thing and look at the experience. Do you know what I mean? So people do look at it like that, which I understand. I get that. How can you go from 35 to that? And you've only put I think the email read like, you've gone up from 30% or 35% on your lunch menu, but then you've only gone up by 9% on your tasting menu. I was like, yeah, that's pure. The 9% is purely on services. And then the actual 35% is purely on services and ingredients. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the difference. So. But as I said, it's 99% of people actually do have the tasting menu anyway. I just want to be known to at least offer a second option, basically. It's not too expensive. I'm not expecting people to fork £90, £100 at every single time they come here. I think that to have that little differential of cost, I think is good.
I think it's pretty obvious that you're not all about profit.
Yeah.
That's not the reason why you've done this. And anyone who opens a restaurant to become a millionaire is just insane. Anyway.
Well, you don't open a fine dining restaurant. I can tell you that for free. Yeah, definitely.
So what is your reason for opening upstairs?
I think once you're in this industry, I mean, COVID again, and I mean, you guys would know this, COVID was such a difficult time. But I'll tell you one thing, and this answers this question so shortly in consideration to what you could say. Not once in those 2 years, did I ever question the industry I was in. I never thought, oh, it's time to come out of industry. How many people did? And I just sort of think to myself, like, that's not a negative. I'm not saying they're all idiots or whatever. I don't even got an opinion on it. All I'm saying is like I would never have questioned it. I think that is the answer to that question, in the sense of the moment I started in this industry, I had a goal from the very first time. And it wasn't one of those fantastical sort of kid sort of answer, I want my own restaurant. It's like one day I want to work up to have my own restaurant. So every single step that I do in my career, it will be on purpose for a reason to get me to the position where I want to be. And I'm very fortunate because the mentors that I work for, I chose to work there. Obviously very fortunate to get the job there. I didn't just go, I'm working for you now. Well, good luck, whatever. Like you're the lucky one. Of course, I went for a trial and some trials at SATS were like 3 days, absolutely brutal. But that was it. And for me, it was like that they were all part of that plan. And I was very fortunate that I've worked for all the mentors that I wanted to work for. And then Adams was a case of the sort of the finishing school where it was a bit of a guinea pig for me, which is amazing. The people who own the property or own the restaurant, the name is above the door, but it wasn't Adam, it was Tom in the kitchen doing the food. And it was a bit like, let's see how this goes down now. And unfortunately, it went down very well. And that just gave me more and more confidence to do this. And
we both ate there when you were the head chef there. separately. I ate there, then you ate there a few weeks after. That was class. And that was when you were there, and that was fantastic.
I look back at Adams as really fun because I was there from 2017 to 2020, and every year I just grew. 2017 was really turbulent and quite difficult because I just started, and I had the confidence to be head chef, but I didn't, you know, I was very much wanting to learn on the job. 2018, I really started to develop, and the back end of that year, I really started to understand what my product was, and equally what the restaurant and the customers of Adams sort of wanted in their style, so I could bring that mine into that. And then 2019, I was like just sort of surfing. I just really enjoyed every sort of season change. I really enjoyed seeing the new products, and I had a lot of confidence in the products. I had a lot of confidence in the team, in the product we were serving. It was probably one of the best food that I've sort of done really at that stage. That's what I sort of look back on. And when I first started here, it was because it's a business, because we can't go straight in on those type of prices and or ingredients. It was almost like I was starting again. And now we're building up to that time now where, you know, we are getting some phenomenal ingredients in. The cooking's really confident, but it's really filled with passion and desire. And you can see that in every plate. And that answers that question. In essence of, I now own the restaurant that all happens in, and that's just fucking amazing, isn't it? Really.
How did you know to do that though, from the business side of things? You know, as a chef, you could just walk in here and think, "I've got my own restaurant. I want to do exactly this food. It's going to be top of the range, sub the cost." Like, did you have lessons in business or?
Yeah, well, no, I didn't. Well, so with the pandemic, I did these dine at home boxes. So I went self-employed with those. So it was the first time I've ever had to sort of do my own books and that sort of thing. So to be fair, that was a pretty priceless entity that I was involved in for sort of a couple of years, and Gary put me in such an amazing position for upstairs and for running your own business and restaurant. I think I'm not going to sound sort of patronizing when I say this, but I think you've got to be pretty stupid to open up a restaurant and just go balls deep straight away. And unless you've got an endless bit of money there. I think everything grows, doesn't it? Everything starts from the bottom and you build. And that's no difference in a restaurant, I think, for me. And that's how I did. So our opening menu was to entice people in and to not be too sort of challenging, just to sort of promote what we were really good at, which was flavour, cooking style, and just sort of presenting that in an unchallenging way, but, you know, in a real comfortable, relaxed setting. And with that, you know, as I said, we can then build off that foundation, and that's exactly what we've done. So there's no doubt in my mind that that's what I wanted to do. And I remember we opened after the first month, we had £1,050 profit. And since that day, we've never been out the black, which is great. So it's just built from that. Yeah, 1,050 greens.
That's unusual though for business.
I know, breaking even's about the average.
From the very first month, which is incredible, which is absolutely incredible. We've just built on that since the day one, which is, well, I said that I think that's part of the foundations that I started the business on as well. They have to be solid, positive foundations. If you open a restaurant and you're in shitloads of debt, I just don't think I just don't think it's worth it. I really don't. I really, really don't. But
stress from day one.
Well, it's an unnecessary stress because it's all brought on by yourself. And I think everyone has dreams. And now I'm a firm believer is things happen for a reason at the right time. And that's the same with that. If you're like trying to push a dream and it doesn't feel right, it doesn't sound right, it doesn't sit right, the financial side is all wrong, don't do it. Don't be blinded by this dream of owning your own restaurant and with your name above the door, because it's not enough. It's just not enough. I know you obviously mentioned, say, if you want to be a millionaire, don't be a restaurant owner. I'd probably agree with that. But at the same point, you know, don't be as foolish to say, don't struggle as well. Don't struggle for those. That is a business. You need to make it profitable, obviously. And from that, you know, there should be some sort of balance in there where you are comfortable and you are self-contained and you can sort of look after yourself.
We've kind of like went deep end first than we normally start at the beginning. How did you get into hospitality?
I don't know if this is a common answer, but I fell into it is an understatement. So actually my first job was just around the corner here, and it was at the George Hotel, where I started off as sort of a barman. I won't go any further, but it was probably an illegal barman because I think I was 16 when I first started, but I got away with my height, which you mentioned earlier. And there was a receptionist there who, I think she covered a bit of HR, so she did a few jobs there, and she did a few shifts at another hotel, in Warmley, which is close to Sutton Coalfield. and called Newhall Hotel. Anyway, I got on with, her name is Lorraine, I got on with her really, really well, a really nice lady. And her family owned the George and owned Moore Hall in Sutton as well. Called it was the Best Westerns. And they were such a lovely lady. And we got on really well. And one day she just sort of said, what are you doing it for, Tom? You know, you're just going to be like in the like a barman. I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing. Lorraine's a manager. So I almost need a sign. I need, and she was like, well, I work at Newhall as well in Mormon. It's a beautiful hotel. Got some great guys in there. And they're looking for like a trainee manager. I'll put you on a program for like 18 months. And essentially, you, after the end of it, if it all goes well, then obviously you'll be a manager of a department. And I was just like, well, can we have a chat? And she was like, yeah, I'll set it up. So the following week, I went there. I was only like 17. I went there for this chat. The guy was a Geordie. Mark, his name was, and he was a Middlesbrough fan. We started chatting to him, got on with him like a house on fire. And he said, mate, you'll really suit hospitality, like your personality, you'll really suit it. He said, but where, have you been working on the bar? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, I've just got this really weird feeling that you're going to really suit the kitchen. I said, all right, yeah. I was just like, I've never, not really into food, mate, to be honest. No, I'm not really into it at all. And he was like, yeah, I've just got this fucking weird feeling. But listen, we'll put you on the bar for 3 months and then maybe go into the kitchen. I was never started, you know, I never worked there. So I thought, okay, perfect. So I started. I was just becoming 18. I think I started in like the February, and I was 18 in the April. So did my 3 months, just a bit over. I think I nearly ended up doing about 6 months, because then it was my first sort of insight into staffing issues and people coming and going and all that sort of stuff. So yeah. I saw that. But the one department of that hotel that was really, really constant and just pure quality was the kitchen. And it was a head chef called Wayne Thompson, who is, from my perspective, was the serious maker of me. There's no two ways about that. He was a Villa fan, fellow Villa fan, so he got on like a house on fire. At the time when Martin O'Neill owned was manager of Villa, he used Newhall as the hotel, so I was just like picking shit every fucking Saturday, to be honest. It was just amazing. And then we used to get tickets. I used to go to what with Wayne to the football with him. Because there weren't so many Villa supporters, to be fair, in the kitchens. And he constantly said, when are you in the kitchen with me, Tom? When are you coming to the kitchen with me? You know? And we did, and the day eventually came, and I was super excited. And I was just watching the lads and the girls in there just really sort of pushing themselves. And I just thought, actually, Mark might have a point here. That sort of personality and that approach. I'm a fucking, like, you know, I'm quite a sort of a progressive, you know, sort of guy who really wants to push, and, you know, I work fucking hard. And so I remember on the Monday when I got in, he sat me down in the office at like 8 o'clock in the morning. I was fucking knackered. And I was dressed in this, like, you know, this uniform of these checkered fucking blue and white pants. Do you know what I mean? And your clogs as well. And then these like oversized, like sort of starchy as fuck, like jacket, which looked like a fucking cardboard box on you. And these aprons. I remember looking in the mirror going, you know, this looks so artist, is that? Going down to the kitchen and seeing Matt, and then the mate's whole demeanor changed. It was sat in there, and like his whole face, I was like, hello, Wayne. Like, is everything all right? And he's like, no, this needs like a few rules to your Tom. Like, you know? And he was saying, this is a kitchen. We have like fundamental, like a ladder system. And he says, and like the bottom of that pile, in essence, of who you speak to is fucking you. Like, you're at the bottom, KPs, commies. And he went through the whole entire thing, but that didn't like scare me. I was like, well, that fucking ladder needs climbing. And that's sort of how I felt. But equally, I was like, I was only going to be in there for 3 months. I was like, I'm going to fucking try and push as best as I possibly can. But I was doing like, I was washing salad leaves and fucking peeling tomatoes for Concast for like, and chopping herbs for like 2-3 weeks. Just itching to get to get on something else. And I started cooking. And I can't even explain it. The moment I started cooking, every single thing just came naturally to me. Like everything was just completely natural. Even like knowing the cuisson on steaks, I'd get a fucking steak out of the oven. We used to have this rump steak on in the terrace restaurant. And I'd feel it, and he'd be like, Wayne would be like, what is it? I said, it's medium. I don't even fucking know how I knew that. But I was like, how do I know that? And even little things like, we used to always do sausage mash in there with like onion gravy. And the sausages, like I'd know they were probably a little bit under, but with a rest, they'd be like perfect. But I don't know how the fuck I knew it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then like, I'd season stuff, and the first time it was mashed potato was the first thing I seasoned, which is really bizarre. I did it with the sous chef at the time there. And he was like, Matt, Tom, I just want you, I'm going to add a little bit of salt to it and see if you taste the difference. I was like, fucking hell. That's unbelievable. It's like, he's brought out like the butter and the cream, and he's like, fucking mate, good lad. Like, you add some more. It needs more seasoning. I'm telling you, it needs more seasoning. Is it? But we need to reach that like peak of like seasoning. Everything just tastes fucking delicious, but we don't, but not have salt, so it doesn't go over. So I'm like, okay. So I'm like, I'm there seasoning. I'm like a little bit like something. I'm like, well, that to me just tastes unreal. So I think that's spot on, yeah. So he came over and he like put his spoon in it. So it tastes like, have you done it? I was like, yeah, I'm done. He was like, mate, that's seasoned perfectly. And then we got to like 2-3 months. No one spoke about me moving out of the kitchen. And like Wayne just basically one day was just like, mate, your seasoning, your cooking ability is like far and beyond people that come from college. He says, I would really consider this as a job. And I just went home. Like, bear in mind, I was going home every night, every sort of week. And my mum and dad were like, Tom, like, you've never seen you so passionate. I've never, like, this is amazing. As an 18-year-old kid, like, you were so passionate about cooking. I was buying the books. I was watching Ramsay's Boiling Points. And I just fucking fell in love with Gordon, mate. I was like, I just watched him. I just thought, I've never seen that much desire. I've never seen that much passion, like, in my entire fucking life. I just looked at Gordon. I was just, I want to fucking be him. I just want to fucking be him. And that was it. And it just got to a point where I was just, that the 3-month conversation happened. I was just like, there's fucking no chance I'm being anything else. And to be quite honest, at 18, my mindset is exactly the same today. I just pushed myself. I ended up doing 3 years there. I moved on to the Samling up in the Lake District. And we gained a star there, which was the first time I'd really been sort of involved with Michelin. A lot of the team there had been at Michelin star restaurants. That's front and back of house. So I was very fortunate to join that team. And it was just this pursuit of a Michelin star. And for 2 years, it was just a magical journey. When we got it, I fucking got really upset. I think I was like 21, 22. No, I would have been 23. And I got really upset. Yeah, because I was just like, fuck, it was hard. But now it means I can move on. And the day after we got the star, I handed my notice to one of my best friends. He's still one of my best friends. Alistair is the general manager there. But I was like 23. And he was like, you're a young little fuck. Like, you know what I mean? But he's like, you're a great guy. And he goes, where are you going? I said, I'm going to a 2-star. So I went to Michael Wigan at the Latimer when I was 24. I worked there for 2 and a bit years. And then between 26 and 27, I did a bit of work down in London for a few friends. And then I started at SATS after that to be developed.
So you decided you wanted a 2-star. How did you decide which 2-star to go to?
I was in awe of Michael Wigan. Yeah. And I think the main reason why is it was sort of at the time when Instagram had just sort of started up and the sort of the chef sort of following had started. And I just saw dishes after dishes after dish of Michael putting these up. And they were the most exotic dishes, in essence, of ingredients that we couldn't afford at Samlim. Do you know what I mean? We were talking like on a single menu would be foie gras, crab, scallops, clams, razor clams, turbot, cicadilla, fucking smoked eel. Like, oysters, caviar, fucking truffle. And I was like looking at this menu and I was just like, it was 125 quid. I mean, it'd be about 400-500 quid now, I think. Yeah. Yeah, so just for the cost of ingredients. I was like, I just want to fucking work there. And I went down for a trial in the November time of 2013, 2014. Man, a very few words. I saw him on Monday as well, but man, a very few words. Until he loses it, he's a man of quite a few words, but they're very choice words, and you can I won't give any. Yeah, we'll use your imagination for that. Fortunately, I was never on the back end of that, which is good. But no, I went down there, and it was the most meticulous, methodical restaurant I've ever seen. I did feel the pressure. I felt the pressure big time because I just knew that a lot of the chefs had been there. So I went to Samling where a lot of them had been in 1 stars. I went to the Latimer, a lot of them had been in 2 and 3 stars. And I was like, fucking Jesus Christ. I was 25, 24 at the time. I remember being one of the youngest in the kitchen. And I was a chef de party. And I think the other chef de party was like 33. The other one was like 35. And I was just like, yeah, I don't know if I'm fucking good enough for it. And I fucking smashed it. I mean, I really pushed my head down. But very aggressive kitchen, not from Wignall. Just the chefs in there came from sort of old school places. And I just hadn't. So I just didn't get that. And it's quite mad that now, you know, so 10 years on, the kitchens that are like what I was then are now everywhere. And that's what's really good about the industry, because there's just no need for it. There's just absolutely no need for it. It's the culture we've got upstairs is one where we just look to support and promote people and just give them a platform where they can really express themselves, which I didn't really have that platform, to be fair. But then I sort of look back and think, well, those restaurants never got the best out of me. So I did my all for them, but they never got the best out of me because I never felt that relaxed. But that was the reason. Yeah, I just looked at his food, and I'm still. I spoke to him Monday, And he's still a massive part of who Tom Shepherd is now. You know, he's a huge percentage of what my food and philosophy is, Michael is. And Sat is definitely the one. Sat's a massive, massive, probably the biggest influence on my career, Sat. And who doesn't want to work at Sat Baines? I'm not being disrespectful, but like, man, I looked at the dishes and looked at him as a person. I was like, Sat, fuck it, I just want to work for you.
Yeah.
And that's literally what it was. I went there, had a 3-day trial, cooked a 3-course menu for him. And by all accounts, Michael gave me a phenomenal reference, by all accounts. And after that, and really fast forwarding to now, Sat's one of the biggest supporters of Upstairs, both on social media and obviously personally. I've still got his little, he gave me a little love letter note when we got the star and from him and Amanda, which I've still got because it's inspiring. It inspires me every day. He probably won't accept that, but and then equally, you know, he promotes us at every given opportunity. Me and an awful lot of other chefs as well that used to work there. He calls it the Sat Baines stable. And even at the NRAs, there's about 6 restaurants that were in the top 100 that were owned or ran by chefs that used to go through there. Michelin is countless restaurants are in that guide that used to work through Sat. So
it seems like just an amazing fella. I never met him, but obviously watching him on telly and then listen to the Nightcap Paul Foster's podcast. How much Paul says about him.
Sat's definitely his biggest inspiration for sure. He's told me that in person. And we both have, well, I've said it earlier myself. There's no filter with Sat. There's absolutely zero filter. So what you see is exactly what you get. Don't expect to rock up and have this muted version of Sat Baines, mate, because one doesn't exist. If it does, I haven't fucking seen it. And that's what makes Sat Sat. That's what makes him so amazing. But my God, I've never... I remember going to John Freeman, who's, again, just such a fucking amazing guy. He's been a head chef there for... I might be wrong saying this, but I think it's about 15, 16 years. Wow. I mean, he's not old. He's only early 40s, if that. And I remember just going to him to say, mate, I knew Sat was going to be good, but mate, his palate, his take on... Those 5 tastes that he does, he goes to the 5 tastes. He does all the salt, sweet, bitter, umami, etc. His whole philosophy of each dish is on that. I just thought, I didn't give it much thought before I went there. I just thought, oh, it's just a product that he does to give the customer something else. I don't know what it is, but I didn't really give it that much thought. It's almost like that little key with each dish that gives the little circular key. It is color coded circular key. And with each dish, some might be heavy in salt or umami or bitter or sweet. And each of those circles, whatever ingredients are in there, whatever the taste buds are, he'll put those on there. So some might only have 2 or 3, some might have all 5, and different variations of circles, depending on how big that sort of push is. Mate, it's all from him. So he's like eating these dishes and he's like, I can taste it. I'm like, let me taste it again. You know what I mean? You know, like that. And you're just like, fuck it. But mate, it's just about food and flavour. That's it. So he didn't fucking piss about with fashion. He didn't look at other places and do it. It's just fucking dishes filled with fucking flavour. And those dishes may have acidity, may have salt, may have umami, may have fucking sourness. Do you know what I mean? And that's it. And it's just that's it. That's the Sat Baines. Do you know what I mean? And that's what he does. And I think that was, that really just completely completed me as a chef, Sat did. And he admittedly said that. He sort of turned around to me, I think, one day, and he was just like, Tom, I think you're ready. You ready, mate? He was like, you're ready to be a head chef. Didn't really want me to go, I don't think, because I mean, my final week offered me senior sous position and wanted me to stay with Sat with John, but my mind was made up, and I think, yeah, for that perspective, when Sat sort of tells you that you're ready, I think I'm just going to take that as a bit of advice actually, and go, you know what, Adams is the next stop for me, and that was what it was, yeah.
What did you cook for Sat on that free course?
Great question. So we did 3 dishes. So I did. Bear in mind, they only had 1 menu. I think they only have 1 menu. Oh, they might have just changed it. They've had 1 menu for a very long time. So like we had to use everything that was there. So I made a bit of a beeline not to use ingredients that are essential on the menu, but I was like, I'm fucked, I have to. So like, the main course is duck and the only thing they've got in the fucking place is duck. So I rummaged through the freezer and I saw some smoked eel and I was like, smoked eel with Wignall. I was like, okay, I know how to do smoked eel. So as in like a nice time. So there's teriyaki smoked eel. And we did it like we sort of torched it and then we sort of left it in this like a holding oven at 50 degrees. So that teriyaki was super, super soft. The eel was super soft. I served it with like an apple dish and it was apple radish and soy and wasabi. It was really, really delicious dish. And then as I drove in, I mean, there's a story there to be fair, but I won't bore you with that. But as I drove in, there's some bramble bushes all around all around the around Linton Lane. So I went back up there and picked some brambles that weren't on the menu, and the gardens that are there just full of just like herbs and vegetables and whatnot. So I sort of got a few herbs and veg out of the garden. So I just made a duck dish that was completely sort of not on the menu. I did a dessert with the brambles as well. I did like a whipped lemon curd filled with like blackberries, blackberry sorbet, blackberry syrup, and then the liquid nitrogen. So I put the blackberries in there, and then once they were frozen, I sort of almost turned them into a grill eater, like a little filaments. I just remember, mate, I was standing there in the development kitchen on my own. I got all these dishes together, and I just got this phone call, and it was off John. John was like, "We're heading over, mate. You ready?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm ready. We're ready when you are, guys." And my duck was resting. I was proper ready. I was like, "I feel absolutely fine." So I put the phone down, and then all of a sudden, the window of the kitchen was here, and then the doors are there of the development kitchen. Sat John and Ruben, who was the sous chef at the time, walked past the door. My fucking arse just fell out. And I was like, "Fuck!" And he walks in. He's like a loud character. He's like, "Chief, what's going on?" And I was like, "Yeah, you're right." So he goes, "Yeah, what you got for me? What you got for me?" Like that. So I was like, this is what he's like. He was a big fucking character. So I was looking at him. He was like, "Yeah." So I was like shaking. I was like, so we got like Terekica. And I was halfway through. He was like, "Yeah, sound chef. Can't fucking wait, chief. Can't fucking wait." So like, he sits down opposite, and he's like, he's there back, straight back in, talking about something that happened in service. So I'm like, is he talking about the like, fuck it, man. It's concentrating on your time. So I did two dishes of everyone. I like, go over, I put it down, I'll just quickly explain it. Halfway through explaining, he's already fucking tucked in. So he's like, he's in there. And then John and Ruben were popping, like, looking at me going, "Cheers, Tom, mate." And he was like looking at Sally, was like laughing at him because he just like wants to get involved. And I did that sort of three times. And the initial was like, I think the initial thing he said about the EU, I think he said something like, "How the fuck's he got it so soft?" That was, I thought I heard that. So I was like, That's good, that is. So I came with the ducks. So I was like, doing the duck. And like John, every now and again, I could see John walking over just like that type of thing. It was so funny. Did the duck. And by the duck, I think, yeah, enjoyed the duck. Not a dish that he hadn't had before. I think it was pretty, it was like celeriac and duck, which is obviously been done everywhere. But I think, yeah, it was a hit or miss type of thing. But he enjoyed the cooking and whatnot. And this dessert. And he fucking just loved the dessert. Just loved the different variety of it. And halfway through the dessert, he went, "Tom, come here." "That was fucking good, that was." And I was just like, "Oh, cheers." He goes, "Yeah, we're gonna put a package together for you." And I was just like, "Oh, mate, so is that a job?" And he was like, yeah, definitely. 100% right now. We've done really well. I said, "There's one question I want to ask you." He said, "If I was to phone Michael Wignall up now, what would he say about you?" In my head, I'm like, "Well, Michael, it can depend on what day it is with Michael." Like, so I was just like, how do I say this without being a cock? I was like, so I think I turned around and said, "I'd like to think that he would say something quite positive about me, to be fair." And he was like, "Perfect." I phoned him already. I was like, "Oh, for fuck's sake." He went, "Chief, you got nothing to worry about." I was like, "Okay, perfect." So anyway, walked off, whatever. John stayed in, and John said, "Mate," Wignall was like, "Mate, your reference was fucking glowing, mate. He really did like, maybe just phone you up and just say thank you to me." You know? So I did, I phoned Wignall, and I just said, "Mate, thank you so much." And I said, "I don't want to know what he said, but whatever he said, it fucking works." Like, I wouldn't say Wignall was an out and out idol. I was just privileged to work for him. But mate, that was one of my idols, big time. And he still is now, to be fair. So to work for your idol, he was just, it was quite magical, to be fair. I'd love to go back there at some point. Just obviously their days of operation is the same as ours. And they normally have their holidays at similar times to us as well. So yeah. I will definitely get back there for sure.
We used to always ask a question, like, "Where's your favourite place to eat?" But we stopped asking it because every chef was like, "Everywhere's closed, but it's my day. It's closed.
You can't go anywhere.
I can give you that answer if you want me to."
Yeah, go on then.
Ledbury. Not country mile. I'm not saying it's a country mile because it's better by some distance. Moorhall with Mark. I love Mark to bit. I think Mark's a cracking guy. I was with him on Monday. I went down with him on Monday. He's a fucking great guy. But the Ledbury, it's a personal. The Ledbury, just every dish, it's just me. It's everything I want to be in a chef. To be honest, Brett Graham and Tom Spencer as well. It's got to be a word for that. They're everything that I'd love. I look at Ledbury and I just go, upstairs is that. I want upstairs to have that type of food, that type of delivery. And we will grow into that. Ledbury, you know, I appreciate Ledbury's closed, but you know, it's been, I forgot when it opened. I think it opened like 2014. So yeah. It's been open for essentially for sort of eight or nine years. Brett Graham's just such a phenomenal guy and talent, as is Mark Bertrand. Those two restaurants are up there for me. And then like, you know, Gareth Ward's as well, that restaurant, Inner Sea, is just unbelievable. But it's just my idea of the cooking upstairs, a full dish. So it's not, 30 those small, the most impactful dishes you'll ever eat, which are just incredible. The Ledbury is more of those whole dishes, which is the product that we do upstairs. So naturally, excuse me, I'd warm to that really. But those three restaurants for me are the best in the UK. But the Ledbury just tips it for me. Yeah. So whenever anyone asks in the restaurant, I'm always like, let's go to the Ledbury. You'll fucking love
good
it.
Good that you got an answer, because half the time we never got an answer. So we're like,
yeah. A lot of people, yeah, I don't get to eat anywhere. Yeah, we always say, what's your favourite restaurant? Where do you like eating in Birmingham? They're like, I don't get to eat anywhere.
You ask a chef, what do you like to cook at? It's beans and toast or something like
that. Fucking isn't it? That's the thing, isn't it? No, like, me and Charlie, we've got this, I used to work for a Canadian chef called Cameron, and he used to do the chicken wings before chicken wings became what they are now.
Yeah.
He was doing them like, you know, 2014, 2015, with a blue cheese dip, the fucking celery and carrot crudités. And he did these, like this Frank's hot wing sauce, mate. I just remember eating it for the first time and I was like, Cam, what the fuck is this, mate? Like, and he was like, it's like Canadian wings, mate. I was just like, what, mate? Give me the recipe. So he did. And I think me and Charlie was having it even then for like every sort of Saturday night. And then or Sunday or whatever, and then now we make a bit of a thing. So we invite the sous chef over sometimes, Mikey, with his missus Kate, and because Kate and Charlie have just got on with each other like a house on fire. So all four of us just have a few beers and whatever, and then we'll enjoy the wings as well. So yeah, it's going to be do it for staff food every now and again as well, which is just wicked. So they're definitely my fave.
Oh man,
my recent convert to wings. I didn't see the point in them, but. Lately,
it's mad. Isn't it?
I've been going out him for years and years, like get the wings, and he's finally on board the wing train.
Good lads.
Version of a chicken pie for me, like not enough to him. Like,
I agree. All I would say is that, you know, like tenders now. Like, tenders are massively like they just don't get used because of wings. But mate, tenders are probably. It might be a bit of an unpopular opinion, but I actually probably prefer the tenders, especially in the hot wing sauce. But they're just wings, aren't they? You just got to do it.
What made you choose Simpson Adams?
I wanted to come home. That was the first thing. I wanted to come back to Birmingham. And me and Charlie were ready to sort of, we had a place in St Albans, to be fair, when we were down near Wignall's. And then we thought, you know, let's move closer to home. You know, we just sort of want to buy our own place and stuff like that. So we bought our first place together in Birmingham. And we wanted to, so it came obviously after Adams. And I was looking for such a particular position. And what it was for a chef owner to take me in and allow me to completely take over the restaurant, the kitchen serve, basically, so all the food operation, and to allow me to just to literally learn to be a head chef, learn to what my food philosophy is.
Is that a common thing that happens or not?
I'm going to say no.
No, I wouldn't think
I'm
so.
I'm going to say no, mate, yeah.
Especially when you got your name above the door.
Well, that's it. Well, Adam was in, so I first met Adam, and mate, we got on like a fucking house was on fire, the first conversation we had. And it was like this sort of light bulb moment where I was everything that he was looking for at that time and he was everything I was looking for at that time. His kids at the time were like, I think there's Hugo and Jensen. I think Jensen's the older one, to be fair. So I think Jensen was about 4 and Hugo was coming on to 2. And they got to that stage which they just sort of missed their dad, basically. He was never at home. And he just says, I just love the option of just not being here every service. And I was like, man, I can totally see that. And in my head, I was like, I sort of don't want you here every service. I want to sort of let my wings sort of like. So that was it. And we opened up, and initially from the get go, he had a few nights off from the get go, which I look back now, I'm just like, fuck you now. But I enjoyed it. It was good. But Adams sort of, it was not so much Adams as the place as it, I have to go to Adams. It was more of a case of that sort of foundation was great. And after coming back, I did quickly realise that Adams was a very popular restaurant. It was sort of known as the restaurant that was quite difficult to get into, ironically. And then on top of that, it's just a beautiful restaurant. You walk in, the bar's massive, and you know, get a seating area, a little booth, and then the restaurant's just big and it's nice. And yeah, very quite classical, but you know, a lot different to what we do here. But at the same point, I was more than happy to create a product there that was going upstairs into the restaurant. So, and the kitchen was, I don't know if you've been to the kitchen.
Went to the chef table downstairs.
It's fucking huge. It's like Kitchen of Dreams, isn't it? Really? It's a bit too big. I'm saying that as a negative perspective. It's impossible to have your eye on everything, which I like doing that. So, not that I'm like a micromanager or anything. I allow people to do what they need to do. But at the same point, you do want to be in service. You want to sort of try and see everything. So that was quite hard at Adams. But But no, that was it. And it was just the perfect timing for both of us, I think. And that was just how it sort of came about. And then we bought our first place in Feb 2018, moved in May 2017 to Adams, and then bought our first place. We rented up until the new year, and then the new year we bought our own place, and had Grace a year after that and a little daughter. And yeah, that was it really. So yeah, quite very fun memories at Adams.
Wow, yeah, it was very good. So Adams is like, straight away, it's what I would imagine the Michelin star restaurant to look like.
Couldn't agree more.
It's a lot of people now try and do the relaxed fine dining.
Yeah. But
that's not what they do. They do the proper.
They do, and if they stick to the. I've had a conversation with Adam about this, and it's like he's often used the term every sentence. But you know us, mate. You know, when we do something, we want to do it fucking properly. Yeah. It's fucking right, mate. They do. They don't want to like do half-assed. Yeah. They come to Adam's for that. It is fine dining. It is. Will it age? I think it possibly will without sounding too high. I think it will. I think the service could become, over time, stiff. I think, is that a bad thing? No.
No.
It is what Adams is. Do you know what I mean? So that's it. It's just like that. And you go there, if you go to Glen Eagles or the Waterside, they're still doing Silver Serve and Ala Press. Yeah. Mate, like, you go there for that. Yeah. Not Glen Adams, you could go there for that. Yeah. For that sort of strict, structured service. So there's nothing wrong in that. You're just essentially refining the customers who want that type of experience. I would love to go to Le Gavroche for that exact reason. That really classical, the Waterside, that really classical fucking experience.
I've always wanted to try that press duck, you know, where they put it in the machine and just like squeeze all the life out of it completely.
They do it and they make the sauce out of that.
Yeah, it's I've always wanted to try that.
I have, mate. Well, someone put it on. Someone went there last Sunday. A chef went there last Sunday, which I forgot who it was actually. I was on his Insta. I think he just said it. What a masterclass of a Sunday lunch. And there's pictures of this like polished to the inch of its life. I would have thought it's sterling silver, polished to an inch of its life. And this thing has got like, this press, this duck carcass. And there's like juices coming down. Made the sauce table side and just poured it over. I'd almost be like, mate, I don't even want to eat it. It's that good.
It's incredible. It just feels special.
That's what I mean. It looks such an experience.
That's when the price, I think, that's a one-off experience. Do you know what I mean? So you're just like, I'm just, whatever much it is, fuck it. Yeah. I'll worry about that later. Yeah. I'll do it now. I'll enjoy it. And that's it.
That's how I would do it when I go to a restaurant. I'll worry about it tomorrow.
It is, mate, absolutely. I was saying, like with Gareth Ward, it's an expensive thing. You won't probably, for two of you, with a stay, because it's a mission to get to. You won't see any change out of a grand.
I know, I'm going in July, so my missus is paying for it for my 40th.
Well, it's incredible, isn't it? you don't choose that as an option.
Yeah.
You go there because it's fucking, look at it. You go there because of what it is, do you know what I mean? The best restaurant in the UK, just been voted. So it's like, that's it, that's why you go there. So you just bite the bullet after and just love it for what it is.
Yeah, well, I'm very, very excited.
It is. I've been there twice, it is unreal.
Yeah, it looks incredible.
So then after Adams, we obviously got to upstairs, which we've talked a bit about. But what was it like winning a star so early on? How many months was it?
It wasn't many, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, so we opened October 8th. And then we got the phone call on February the 8th. And then obviously we come out on February the 16th was the actual release date of our star.
Did you expect it?
Absolutely not, mate. No, absolutely not. When I was at Adams, the inspectors used to come in and actually interview you. And I want to get to know you and whatnot. So like that was actually really special for me. It was the first time I've ever met a Michelin inspector. I remember his name. To be fair, I don't think it's an issue if I say his name was Jeremy Tatton, and he was one of the nicest guys. And I remember him saying to me at the end, "Tom, do me a favor." He pulled me back and he was like, "Tom, do me a favor." He says, "Don't fucking change." And I was like, "Cheers, chef." He's like, "You just got so much energy, mate. Just fucking don't change." He goes, "And don't take that beef cheek croquette off the menu either." I was like, oh, okay, mate, never went off the menu. I was like,
I'm keeping that.
It's on here now. But now it was it. And then they came back the second year, and I think they came back the third. And the third was a different inspector, not quite as open to conversation as Jeremy was. But he was a lot, you know, he was still very able to have a conversation with, which was lovely. And that was it. And then, so I think they sort of knew what I was about and what upstairs potentially was going to be about. And then they started following us on the socials really close to our opening time. Mm. I thought, that's fucking wicked, that is. Yeah, it's like, that's really give us a boost, that is. Yeah, obviously you'd never know when they come in, but there was a few tables that you sort of essentially would potentially question, but you haven't even got fucking time. You just opened up. It is what it is. It's simple as that. And you just keep your head down and just try your best to sort of do what you do. But I equally knew that, like I said earlier, our opening menu was
was just very simple in comparison to what it is now. It was just making sure that we're sourcing the right ingredients, we're cooking it to the best of its ability, we're creating a dish that's harmonious and seasonal and delicious, and it's unchallenging. But I think sometimes, I think that's what Michelin really looked for, actually, was that refined, stripped back, just organic dish. Every single dish on the menu was that. I mean, you only got to read what they took out of upstairs on their notes. The notes just completely justifies what upstairs is. That's it. Like they when whoever inspectors came, they've nailed what we were about, and they got it from the moment they walked in, from the moment they left, they got what upstairs was about. And fortunately for us, they wanted to celebrate that fact and put it into the guide, which was fucking incredible. And that is the goal. And I always wanted to have my own Michelin star. And that was just, yeah, cried my eyes out. Half the team cried their eyes out. It was one of the most magical days of my entire life, and one that I will never, ever, ever forget.
What did you get? Get an email first or something?
Phone call first.
Phone call.
Yeah, from a French lady. And it was almost, I had this really weird image of it, and hear me out on this. So it's midway through Sunday lunch, and Alex, our sommelier, so our old office used to be like office, staff room, wine room. So Alex went in there to get a bottle of wine for a table, and he was just literally, as he walked in, things, when I say things happen for a reason, things happen at certain times. I walked in, mate, and he walked in, and this French lady was leaving a note from the Michelin Red Guide for Chef Tom Shepherd to give her a call back. So he comes out, and I'm plating this fucking beef, this Sunday roast, which we don't do anymore. And he comes up to the pass, he's like, Tom, some woman from the Michelin Red Guide just left a voicemail. I was like, gee, fuck off. And he's like, no, honestly, he just left. I was like, are you fucking joking me? So like, I'm like, Mike, chief, can you just, he was like, yeah. So I ran into the back. Could I understand a word she was saying? Could I get the number down? It seemed like he was about 20 digits long. So I was like, fuck, because I like tried to write this down. And it was actually the area code that I really struggled with. So I thought, I can't do it now. I'm going to go. So I went back into service, finished Sunday lunch, rushed back in, Googled French aerial codes. The first one, there's four. And one was in Paris. I was like, it's got to be Paris, isn't it? So I did this Paris. And then I got the rest of the number. Started to ring. I just have this. This is the weird image. I have this image that I interrupted her doing something like fucking. And I got this image. Don't ask me why. That she was like hanging out the washing. I don't even fucking know why I've got this. But I've got this weird fucking feeling that she like had some pegs in my hands. And she had someone's fucking T-shirt over her shoulder or something. She was like, hello? So she answered this French, obviously she's French woman, so she answered this really deep accent. She was like, hello? And I said, hello, yeah, I don't know if I got the right number, but it's Tom Shepherd. And she was like, ah, Chef Tom Shepherd. I said, yeah, that's right, yeah. And then she was just like, yeah, I need to set up this Zoom call with Gwyn Del Polinek, who's like the president of Michelin. So I was just like, why do you want to do that? And she was just, and she was like, I can't really say, but like, can I put you like, next Wednesday, okay? And I was like, Yeah, absolutely fine. Like, okay, she goes, I'll give you the invite straight away. Thanks, Tom, and have a great day. And all that. And she was like, asking me how service went. It's amazing, but really lovely woman. I just had this image of like pegs, T-shirt and fucking phone. And I put the phone down and I just like, went back in. Alex was the first person who only knew, he didn't say it to anyone else. He was like, well, what was it? I said, Chief, they were chasing me for some images. And he was like, what was it? I said, yeah, they were just chasing me for some images for the website. Like, it's just, yeah, it's all smoked, other thing. So it was completely dull and nullified it all. Went home. Charlie just absolutely was in tears, mate. I told her. I was just like, why are you crying? She's like, you've got a star. I said, there's absolutely no chance we've got a star. I was like, A, the timing, but B, I was like, it doesn't come out for another fucking 2 weeks. I was like, there's no way they're going to tell me the biggest achievement of my entire life 2 weeks before. How the fuck am I going to keep my mouth shut? So I got no sleep Sunday night. No sleep Monday night.
So cruel to do.
I know, yeah.
But mate, by Tuesday, I'd convinced myself, because I was fucked. I convinced myself there was no chance I got a star. I convinced Charlie that we hadn't got a star. Started saying the Bib Gourmand's come out a week before, so I've probably got a Bib Gourmand. They're probably just telling me because obviously COVID and all that. And she's like, yeah, possibly. So I came in Wednesday, mate. I was on pastry at the time because that's what the section I did at the time. Smashed pastry like I hadn't smashed pastry before. The phone call was at 5:15. I went back into the office, locked the door, 5:12. I thought, I'm looking forward to it, but you know, at the same point, I know it's not going to be a star. Sat down on the desk anyway. It was like A3 or A5 media or whatever. And they came on, just this English guy, and he was like, I was like, fucking knew it. So I was like, hello, mate, you're right. He said, yeah, can you just like sit back a little bit, mate? And just, you got a laptop or a computer? I said, yeah, like computer. He's like, can you just tilt the screen a little bit more forward? So I did.
And he was like, perfect, okay, okay, just sit up straight. So I was like, this is a fucking hell. My knees were like shaking. And I was just like, yep. And he was just like, okay, Gwindale's going to be on in a second. I was like, fuck, Jesus. Thing went blank. And then all of a sudden he just pops up. He's like, ah, hello, Tom. I said, hi, Gwindale. He was like, you good? You okay? I said, yep, you? And he was like, oh, I'm fantastic, guys. And he was like, going for this. And he was like, I think he said something like, it's risky opening a restaurant in the pandemic. I said, yeah, this has been going well. He said, I think my inspectors are struggling to get in. I said, oh, fucking hell, don't say that. You know what I mean? So he was like, and he was like, but they did. He says, they did. And I would like to say congratulations and award you with One Michelin Star. And just the first thing that came from my mind was just everything I've been through.
Yeah.
All the sacrifices, all the shit hard days, the mental health aspect to it all. I just thought to myself, this is why I did it, I think. This is actually, it all just became complete, like all of it just became, made sense. All the drive, all the push, even opening this place was fucking so difficult when we first opened. Staffing, and we had a big leak on the water. I was just like, it was carnage. We had building control all over us because they didn't do the final checks. I was just like, leave me alone. And all of a sudden, like the council, we can't do enough now with the council. They're just like, we love you to bits, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like building control, don't worry about it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, no, it's just everything was just made in that one moment. And then I came through to tell the staff, there's a video on my Instagram from a CCTV thing, from showing the time I told them. It was just the most magical time, mate. It was when I told them, everyone just lost it, like lost it.
Imagining, do you know when Only Fools and Horses, you know when they come out of the auction house, yeah, making all that money and getting the Reliant Robin?
Literally, mate, it's just, I had to have about 10 minutes to myself. They asked, when I was on the Zoom call with Gwindale, they asked me to call Charlie. So I called Charlotte up and told her, and they recorded me like doing the voice thing. I couldn't speak then. And Gwindale was like, Tom, we're going to leave you now because we can see. And I was like, thanks, mate. Best going. And I just had a chat with Charlie, and then I sort of sobered myself up and then went into the time. I was like, guys, I need to speak to you all. Like, I said, something's happened. I couldn't look at any of them. And they were all like, what's happening? And I just got into the corner. I said, guys, I just received a phone call. Like, and we've just won One Michelin Star, and everyone just fucking lost their shit.
I got goosebumps.
Mate, it's unbelievable, mate. And it was that feeling that, you're right, it was that feeling then for the whole day and the whole week and then the whole year. Every customer who came in, and people coming in that night.
Yeah.
And we were like, we're Michelin stars. We obviously didn't say anything. But we were like, and near the end, I remember Ian Taylor, the Villa player, he came in for Valentine's Day 2 days before we were going to be. And he was like, mate, this is fucking good. This is, mate. And I was like, oh, thanks, Ian. He went, nah, like, it's like, you could get a Michelin star for this, mate. And I was like, cheers. Ian, that means a lot, that does, mate, you know. And he was like, yeah. He said, but when does it come out? I said, it actually comes out in 2 days. I've got everything crossed. Obviously, 2 days later, we got a star. He's like, told you. Told you to get inside that. He's like, excuse me, I fucking wrote to him. I was like, fucking shut the fuck up, mate. But no, he's a friend of the restaurants now. Yeah. She's just fucking mad, really.
So. I'm just thinking of that fella sitting there all day telling people they've got Michelin. What a job. Sitting there, like, you've got the Michelin stuff. Like, that must be incredible.
Well, we went, so my first ceremony was this year.
Yeah.
So obviously, I would have got it last Feb. The first ceremony was at Silverstone in March. And so I went there, and obviously, because it was after GBM, so I saw Paul Ainsworth, saw Tom Kerridge, I saw Sat, saw Michael, and saw like friends that I've made now for the industry. Fucking incredible, mate. But they actually turned around to us and were like, guys, we want to give the people who weren't allowed a ceremony because of COVID,
I watched it this year.
And we came, mate, that was so lovely, mate, because I mean, I was up there and I made friends with obviously Will from Roots in York, Tommy Banks, Staple. So I made friends with Will Lockwood from GBM. So I saw him up there and some other people that we saw up there as well. It was just like Tom Spence. So I saw them up there. It was fucking amazing to spend time with them. And obviously Gareth got 2 stars in that time as well. So yeah, it was wicked to see all them up there as well. So
did you say it was Matt? No, you said about your first job at the hotel. You said, you know, I've got a feeling you're going to be a good chef. Is it Mark?
Mark, yeah.
Do you still know him?
I don't, mate, to be fair.
Did you not ring him up after winning the star? Remember me? Remember you said?
Literally, I think, so a customer came in about 2 months ago. Mark Clayton, his name was. He came in about 2 months ago and he went, Mark, he's so fucking proud of you. Oh. I was like, can you make sure he fucking comes back in here, mate? Because I ain't got his number. I don't know where he lives. I mean, so I think he's a bit back in the northeast now, but he's like, mate, he wants to book in. I was like, mate, if there's one guy who walks through the door, I'd probably say, mate, I'd give
him the biggest hook. Oh,
100%, yeah. Just because, yeah, just like, I don't even know if he's into food. I don't really know enough about him because I've learned all that now. So like, I don't even know if he's into food. He just saw me and he was like, you'll be a chef, mate. Yeah, you just got that personality.
What an eye he's got there.
Yeah.
Clearly.
And same with Wayne, as I said, well, I wouldn't be in this position without the support of Wayne. They would have, I mean, Mark and Wayne got on really well. Like, they're the same sort of character. And without Wayne sort of pushing him, he's been here about 3 or 4 times. And I've just, every time, I'm just in awe of the guy, because I'm like, without you, Wayne, like, I don't know. He goes, Tom, I'm not a Michelin star chef, mate. So don't pull that on me. Do you know what I mean? Like, but yeah.
It's true, though. I mean,
without his belief,
get you started,
it was a belief, mate. It was like, there was a lot of chefs in there, I think, were quite jealous of me just coming in off the bar and just being half decent. So he was just like, mate, fuck them. Like,
all the natural talent in the world, if you haven't got the work ethic or someone who believes in you, it's worth nothing.
There we are, mate. Absolutely. Yeah. I'd almost say that, we always say here is that we can teach you skills. Mm-hmm. The attitude needs to come first. And I think I always had a mindset, even from school, that I just wanted to just push. I was on this like train that I just didn't want it to stop. I just wanted to keep pushing. I didn't just want to say, oh, I'm all right at this. Yeah, I'll just stay here. Nah, that's not fucking me, mate. I just want to keep, and it's the same here. We just want to keep pushing them upstairs.
But that probably answers my next question, which was, so you win the star, everything's amazing.
Yeah.
What the hell makes you want to go on telly and do Great British Menu?
GBM was a complete, was the most personal journey I think I've ever been on. So yeah. So going back to Newell, the first, they were like, watch these shows. What, have you seen Great British Menu? I was like, nah. I was like, watch Great British Menu. First series I watched was Ren Glynn.
Yeah, got to the yeah same thing. As us.
15 years ago, mate. Yeah. 15, 16 years ago.
That was what got me interested in
food, yeah.
Properly interested in food. Well, mate, just watching him do that egg.
So you can completely get well coming from. And also, he's a Brummie and he had a Michelin star restaurant. I was like, will I ever be him? Will I ever get to the position? I now have. On top of that, he's now come to the restaurant. I've cooked for him. Apparently, he's in a recent talk and he said that this is the best meal he's had this year and stuff. He's an idol of mine, Glenn. He's like a massive idol of mine. And I always thought I'd work for him as well, to be fair. I never really, this path's never really worked out. So I watched that. So then at GBM, the whole journey was just a complete personal one. And I remember just like saying it to them as well, saying that I watched Glenn do this 15, 16 years ago. And like, if I'm in a position now to replicate what he does, gets a dish to the banquet, I'll be fucking just incredible. And I did. And that was it. It was fucking hard. But it was one of the best experiences again that I've ever
had. No, you absolutely smashed it.
Oh, it was amazing.
I mean,
mate.
You could have had 2 courses easily.
I think maybe in former years I potentially would have. I think that there was just a bit of a beeline, because I think the last year that Spencer had 2. What more?
I mean, watching him, that was.
He could have the whole fucking menu, mate. Yeah.
That was the most impressive thing. What he did in every single course was the most impressive thing I've ever seen.
I think he's. To say he's a veteran of the competition, I think he's the best chef who's ever been in that competition.
Yeah.
Like, it's as simple as that.
But I think you could tell he kind of struggled at the banquet trying to get the 2 courses.
Well, I'd heard this, it's after. A lot of work. But I think Tom Kerridge was right. He sort of said to me, he was like, Tom, he said it to Nick, actually, to be fair, not me, but he said to Nick, he was like, Nick, like, there's no way. Like, because Nick obviously got the fish and also got 40 for his dessert. So he could have been 2. I think Nick was a bit like, what happened? And he was like, mate, to be fair, we just sort of said, made a bit of a beeline, just going, guys, only do 2 chefs if you actually have to. And they obviously felt that Adam's dessert was way up there as well, so they thought, easy, just let's get Adam.
And that something. Dessert did look great as well. The best concept,
I think, potentially one of the best dishes. Yeah, again, fell in line with the banana, fell in line with the best Dan cow pie. It was so creative. But the dish itself was fucking amazing as well.
You must have been like, I'm going to give him a pie. I can't believe I'm going to do this.
Fucking crazy, mate. Like, it was just, yeah.
Proper pie as well, though.
Yeah,
not
like
fucking
a real pie.
See, I'm not about this puff pastry lid bollocks, mate. It's an all-round fucking encased pie.
Yes, I mean, we've had this. Like, a puff pastry lid is not a pie. Not it's a all. Stew.
With a
lid
on
it. That's it.
The shit lid of that. Yeah. Yeah, hot crust pastry. All around, filled with just, yeah, it's fucking incredible, mate, yeah. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to do from the get-go, really, to be fair.
Yeah, it was brilliant, mate. Watching you on telly was class.
Oh, mate, I loved it, mate. I loved watching it back as well. I know people who, I was just, mate, it's a fucking proud moment, you know what I mean? Really proud. And even with MasterChef going to the chef's table, when I got that invite, I was just like, fucking hell, this is like, oh, it was amazing. I've been invited again this year, which is just, yeah, I'm so, so happy.
Because that program has done so much for people's business,
mate,
and careers.
The guys behind it, mate, are fucking amazing. So Sarah, I wanted to sort of say this, Sarah Eglin, who's like, I think she's the exec producer. I won't go as far as saying I've made a friend in her, but like, I mean, I call her Eglin. I just saw a message now, I call her Eglin. I think, no, some people are scared of her. No, just get on, mate. I just love chatting to her. And just, she's just such a supportive woman. She's come here. that says it all, doesn't it? She's actually come here with her husband and a couple of friends and stuff. I was just like, says it all, mate. Do you know what I mean? So we got on really well, and she's very supportive of what we do. And I think it's her program at the end of the day. Since I thought, I think she hasn't said this, but I think from if people promote it, I think she looked at me as I was obviously just naturally just going, thank you so much. I was pleasant to everybody there. I was just being myself, mate. I think they noticed that. And I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but I think they enjoyed having me on the show, and I very much enjoyed being on the show. And that was it, really. So for me, I loved every second of it, and I'll do it again in a heartbeat, to be honest. So,
I mean, you already had the bookings down, but we know people that have been on there and they said that was it. They broke the internet.
It did. And it was like getting a second star. It was like it was almost Michelin star again. I mean, it was like the same sort of thing and some actually. I just hope with like MasterChef again this year, we can sort of keep that sort of going. And a couple of opportunities have come about of recent time as well, which hopefully then, you know, obviously put me.
I was going to say, you've come across really well on telly. I can imagine you're going to be on telly a bit more now.
Hopefully, there's a couple of things in the pipeline, yeah, for sure. Don't know if I'm allowed to say them, to be fair, but there's a couple of things in the pipeline that have all been signed off. So, yeah, literally watch this space, I suppose. but no, definitely, I think when those two things come out, I think it'll be really good for the business, to be fair, and hopefully they carry on just growing from there. Really,
we've talked up loads of your time. Obviously, everyone's getting ready for service.
It's all in the restaurant. It's all good.
Carl's going to ask some, like, we finish on a fun way, just some light-hearted questions.
Perfect.
But I've got one of my own, which I haven't been out. So in this restaurant, obviously, people can't see. There's like glass kind of boxes with like nice plants and stuff.
Yeah.
But then there's one over there, and it's just got a Coke can in it. What's the story?
That's an old Coke can as well.
Mate, so that's as old as me.
Yeah.
So basically...
I say it looks like when I was a kid.
Because of the pandemic, we...
I just kept looking at it. I was like, why is that? I'd not ask that.
It's a great chat. So basically, that's there. So we, in the pandemic, me and Mikey, the sous chef, were in here every week knocking down the walls ourselves. And we knocked down one wall in the back stud wall. And literally on the actual stud work was the can of Coke. And down the bottom was a bottle of rum. And I got it out. And my dad was obviously working downstairs. So I went downstairs and said, Dad, I was fucking found this in the wall. He was like, that's it, mate, in May 1988. I was born April 98. So he was like, fucking hell, Tom. And he looked at the, he's like, he goes, that's it. Is it Calabria? I think, or something called, I think it's called something. It's obviously rum and coke, but it's called, yeah, called something. My dad was like, can I have that? And I was like, yeah, fuck me, I'm not bothered. Then for Christmas, when we first opened, he got the lady who did these called Liz. He got her to do a box for that. And basically, nice. He's just doing a little note saying from the archive. It was like 1988, meant to be. Tom's opened up a restaurant. He's born in 98. Yeah. The Coke can's 98. Everything. So basically, that was it. And we get so many questions from guests saying about the same. But it's just things. I said things are meant to be. Things happen for a reason. When I found that, I was just like, this is fucking mad.
I couldn't see the rum from here.
That's it.
You didn't have a try.
Mate, there's a tight. It's like, say it's syrup is an understatement on the bottom. Yeah. It's stuck to it, but yeah, we haven't cleaned it. We just left it exactly how it is, and the amount of people who come up and just go, "What's that?" and they have a little look at it.
This is an old reference, but it looks like the Coke cans. You know the ones that used to dance when you made a noise.
Yeah.
They used to like cripple them. Yeah, like people, there'd be so many people listening to this game. What's
it on about? the actual top on the top is tiny.
Yeah.
It's a tiny little teardrop on the top ring ball. Yeah. What's that drink called, Ant? Cuba Libra, that's it. That's
what it says.
Nice. Yeah. So. Right, that's the story.
It's a good question.
Anything else you wanted to bring up, or
not at all, man? I'm just thank you for.
We'll ask you a couple of quick questions, just so people get to know the personal side.
Go on.
What's your favourite TV show?
God, that's a really good question, mate. I think these are quick fire questions as well, aren't they? Well,
every Villa fan lately has said match of the day.
Have that, yeah.
They never used to say match of the day for some reason.
No, I was in the one. It's actually finished now, but the one show I absolutely loved was Soccer AM. I used to love Soccer AM.
Yeah.
I love A League of
Their Own.
It doesn't
have to be on now. You can be of any time.
Yeah, I'd probably say, like Soccer AM, League of Their Own. But
I used to love They Think It's All Over. I thought that was wicked. That was such a good TV show.
It was awesome. That was a cracking thing. But I love like dramas and stuff like that. So like, Line of Duty, mate. I love Line of Duty.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't really got one overall one thing. But like Top Gear, I love Top Gear, and But yeah, I'd probably say like League of Their Own. When James Corden was on that, it was fucking intense. That was.
Remember that used to be half an hour as well.
I know they're like hour shows.
I thought it was half an hour.
Yeah,
I did
a bit more punchy, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a bit more of a punchy show. To be fair, I probably agree with that. Yeah,
I feel like they just drag shows out. Everything used to be half an hour. Now they just drag it out to an hour with recaps and.
So I just watched Man Like Mabeen. Have you watched that?
That's so funny, man.
Yeah, so it's 20 minutes long. It's like,
I know, it's just perfect.
That's what it should be.
Exactly. No, I agree with that.
What's your favourite movie?
Favorite movie, again, great question. American Gangster, I think.
That's one of my
favorites. Yeah, yeah,
Have you watched the spin-off?
Nah.
No, the prequel.
Nah.
I didn't know there was one.
Forrest Whitaker, Once Upon a Time in Harlem or something like that.
No.
I've heard the name. Yeah, I didn't know that was a spin-off of that.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen it.
Was it Bumpy?
He was his driver, wasn't he? Yeah. Denzel was his driver.
Yeah, that's it. So it's about Bumpy. Not about Denzel, it's about Bumpy. And I think Forrest Whitaker plays Bumpy. I'm sure, I haven't seen it.
Oh, that's class, that is.
Awesome.
But yeah, probably like them sort of films. That's they're definitely, yeah, I love that.
What's your favourite band or artist?
I've got quite a complex genre of music, to be fair. I'd probably say I do like house music. I like Calvin Harris is probably up there, to be fair. Every tune he brings out is a bit of a banger.
He's done a lot as well.
He's done loads. He's done a lot.
Many people as well.
Literally, don't realise how many sort of like featuring artists there are. But yeah, I think every sort of song he brings out is pretty. Yeah, I'd probably say them too. Probably say Calvin Harris, to be fair.
Do you have a favourite cookbook?
I do actually, and. Yeah, the one is a really old one. It was actually, it's Gordon Ramsay's Passion for Flavour. It started from like 96, I think it is. It was like when aubergine going into Ramsay's was like, it was before its time. And it's always one that every time I go into the back, because all my books are here now, every time I see it, I smile. I think it's the only sort of book that I really look at and smile. And in the Ramsay 3-star book as well, was one that even now I look at those dishes and they're just so aesthetically incredible. And I've eaten there a couple of times, and I think Matt Abay, who's there, is one of the best chefs in the UK. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. And I think those two, but Passion for Flavour is one that, makes me smile every time.
I think that's the standout on people's cookbook collections. Obviously, you can cook stuff from that book.
Yeah.
But like me and Liam get these books. Like I've got the Tom Kerridge one for The Hand of Flowers.
Yeah, good book.
And I can't cook in my kitchen. I'm not equipped to cook anything from that.
Yeah.
So it's literally just reading. I think that sets a cookbook collection aside.
Yeah, I sort of do that though, man. I do. I mean, I'd never. Yeah, I look for certain recipes in certain books, but to be fair, like the Passion for Flavour, I love just going through it.
Just reading it, how the process.
Absolutely.
Do you have a favourite big fast food chain?
Is Wagamama's? Does that count?
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah, Wagamama's then for sure. I love Wagamama's. I love it. Yeah, I take my daughter there as well.
What do you have when you go there?
I always have the. To be fair, I have about. Three of the starters. So we have gyozas, the buns, and the chili squid is just mega. I just love that chili squid. But for main, I'll have like, I can have anything. I can have like the katsu curry, which is obviously really plain and simple. What else do they do? I have a ramen sometimes as well. I had a salad the other day, like, which is a bit crazy, but it just sounded like, say crazy, it's obviously not bad, but I think I just had, I forgot what it was. It was like a teriyaki beef salad, but it was absolutely delicious, man. Yeah, with the mains, I have anything, like literally anything.
What's your favourite food destination in the world?
That's a really good question. My favourite place I've been to is New York, without a shadow of a doubt. I think me and Charlie went there. It was for my 30th, and we went there and we were like, I could actually live here. And I think there's only very, very few people who can actually say that.
Mm.
But the food, everything about it was just, I just loved every aspect. We were able to eat in a couple of 3-stars there, and it was just incredible. So that would be definitely be my favourite, would be New York. Have I been to my favourite yet? I don't know yet. Yeah. So I'd really like to travel more, like Japan and sort of Tokyo, the Asian side.
Yeah, Tokyo is incredible. That's my number one, 100%.
Well, I think that will very quickly become mine, potentially, given the fact that my favourite fast food chain is Maggots.
Yeah.
I think there's a potential that it doesn't even touch the size, is it there? So, I'd probably say that. I think the destination's still to come. My favourite up until now is definitely New York.
I love New York. I think people think I'm mad, but I see massive similarities between New York and Birmingham.
Okay.
Do you know, like, all the cultures, so many different cultures in one place. I feel like there's a weird kind of friendliness, but not friendliness. So, like, I don't think someone would punch you in the face for no reason.
Nah, definitely not.
But like, no one's overly friendly either.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I probably
you know,
agree with that.
If, someone, if you were stuck or lost, I think someone would help you.
100%, definitely.
But like,
do
maybe
that
a little bit begrudgingly.
Yeah.
I like it, you know what I mean?
No, I get that. I think
there's no warm hugs everywhere.
No, not at all.
But that's fine because I don't want that.
But New York is so busy. Like, it just doesn't stop. Yeah, so I think so busy, from New York, it's more of a point of view. Interrupt someone, it's more about, I've got somewhere to be. What do you want? But in Birmingham, it's just like, what do you want? Yeah, okay. Is it, you know what I mean? It's more like, I haven't really got to go anywhere. But it's just because I'm in Birmingham, it's going to be really awkward. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But New York's more like, mate, if you stop me, I'm already late. Do you know what I mean? Going to some sort of fucking office block that's on fucking tower 118. Do you know what I mean? Floor 118 or whatever. But yeah, it was that was equally one of my favourite destinations I've been to, regardless of food. But we just be, I mean, I put on a stone and a half, which is fucking
easily done over
five fucking days, though. Do you know what I mean? But like breakfast, lunch and dinner, we made it work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we have to go here. But yeah, it was wicked. Yeah, wicked.
Awesome.
Is that
you?
Yeah, it's all done.
Oh, good.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
man,
for coming on,
awesome,
and sharing your story. Really appreciate it.
Mate, thank you for inviting me. And I loved every second of it, to be fair.
Cool,
awesome.
Cheers.
Cheers, dude.
Cheers, guys.